Hey, welcome back to Tight Pencils. My name is Kevin Budnick, I'm the host, and if you're joining us for the very first time, Tight Pencils is an interview podcast where I talk to cartoonists, artists of all kinds, and get to know them a little bit, get to know a little bit about their process. My guest this month is Sophie Yanow. We talk about Sophie's new graphic novel, The Contradictions, which is out now from Drawn and Quarterly. It's a really chill episode. It's a little bit of an ASMR-y vibe. Maybe put it on if you're looking to completely chill out. And I hope you like it. So here it is. I'm also very low energy today, so no worries.
Right on.
But how's the book tour been going?
I think, you know, pretty well, all things considered. I guess I've done a handful of interviews, podcasts, and old live things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot to compare it to, I guess.
Yeah, I guess there's nothing quite like a virtual pandemic book tour situation.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I feel like in some ways I'm probably doing more things than I would have if it were. I mean, because I would have done a few like live appearances, but I definitely couldn't have done as much stuff like sort of on the quote unquote on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, timing wise. Let's start with just having you introduce yourself and like tell us a little bit about The Contradictions.
Okay. I'm Sophie Yanow. I have been making comics for, I don't know, like around 10 years now. The Contradictions is my new graphic novel. Some places have called it a debut. It's not my first book, but it is my first like sort of fictionalized story. And it's like a coming of age sort of adventure story, I guess I've been calling it.
Mm-hmm.
About sort of a fictionalized version of my younger self, studying abroad in France and learning about the world.
Life and things.
Hitchhiking, shoplifting.
Cool.
Excitement.
What was it like? I don't know. My big question is fictionalizing part of it and like what that process entails really. Just like what stuff is added for, I mean also like no spoilers or whatever. but like what, how is it to like, you know, 'cause I also have some thoughts about the veracity of autobiographical work in general.
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah, I mean, it is a bit weird, definitely. I think the way that it sort of came into being was like a combination of things. When I started really early in the process working on, wanting to talk about this period of time, I talked to some of the folks and did some work and sort of showed it to some of the folks who were like around with me abroad. And it was through some of those conversations partially that I was kind of like, oh, maybe it's better just to tell sort of a fiction, sort of a fictional story that incorporates elements of this period. But the other big thing was that I realized at some point pretty early that I wanted to tell the story without like narration being like the main sort of driving factor. And because that was true, I basically really wanted to have like sort of story beats that showed you that, you know, that something happens and you kind of get the impression that, oh, okay, then this must be true, instead of the character like telling you, well, this happened and it meant this to me.
Right.
And so because of that, that meant that I at first it was choosing like sort of specific instances to show, and it just became more and more apparent that if I wanted to do that and have certain moments like hit in the way that I, you know, that I don't know for sure if they did or not in the end, but if I wanted to make an attempt at it, like I sort of was adding, I just was like, oh, you know what, I just want to give myself permission to write fiction. And then so that's how that sort of process began. And yeah.
That's a really, I mean, giving yourself the permission to, I mean, it feels like a freeing thing, I guess. Feels a little,
yeah.
It feels like, I mean, giving yourself permission to do anything within the constraints of a comic feels great, because it means you're telling yourself that it's okay to not do it the way that maybe you think you should. Or not right. Do it the way that you think is maybe the right way.
Yeah, I think there's not like one perfect way to do fiction, right? I mean, similarly, there's not one perfect way to do like memoir or, you know, quote unquote nonfiction or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think, like when I started doing memoir, I think I had almost a very literal interpretation of like what fiction was and like what, you know, what that division was. Mm-hmm. And over the years I kind of realized, oh, a lot of fiction people aren't just pulling it out of thin air, you know. But like with this comic, I didn't want to do like a Charles Schulz thing or imply that like all the characters are like aspects of myself,
right?
You know, like because that wasn't really the case. You know, they're not like specific individuals per se, but like they have like influences from people, like a variety of people in my life. But I would say like the character who's me, like I wanted to indicate like, yes, this is like me in the story. And not try to sort of obfuscate that much.
What was the like, how going, I mean, I just like going back in time and recalling all this shit, like were you writing things at the time? Were you?
Yeah. I mean, when I was over there, I definitely had like, I have that sort of like in early in the book, there's a scene where the character like the character of Sophie is
right.
Like talking about Dharma bums and Zen, the art of motorcycle maintenance. And, like I put that in there to sort of indicate like the headspace I think I was in as like a 20-year-old, where I was aware of what I felt was like the sort of literary quality of traveling or something. So I was definitely, I think, seeking out like something to write about or something that, yeah, seemed like it had sort of been given the nod of approval from like books past.
I think what you're talking about is sort of like the thing that I'm thinking about is like the romantic notion of travel, or like the call of the open road or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is very like early 20s mentality.
Yeah. And I think like when I was, the book that I thought that I would make when I was like there and shortly after I was there is, I think, very different from the book that I actually made. So that to me is funny. Like as a 33-year-old now, right. Like looking back at my 20-year-old self and like what I felt was important and like what I felt was embarrassing mm-hmm. are like, you know, some of it is like charming and absurd to me and some of it still rings, you know, true, but mm-hmm. it's definitely like trying to write something about that time right after it happened would have like, yeah, it would have been a very different story, I think.
I think there's definitely an importance to the way that time changes your perception of like what's valuable about a certain interaction
yeah,
or like a
yeah.
certain memory. Like the,
yeah.
the things that wind up sticking in your memory are more or sometimes not exactly what you would expect when you're going through it.
Yeah, there are certain scenes, and like I don't want to spoil it, but certain scenes where at the time I was like so embarrassed that like something had happened and like wouldn't have even wanted to tell, you know, or maybe didn't tell anybody for years that
yeah.
that something like this had happened. And then it was kind of those moments where later I was like, oh man, like I should definitely write about that because I felt so strongly about it. But now I find that how strongly I felt about it to be, yeah, sort of charming and mm-hmm. not how I feel about it now. But that was sort of like a guidepost.
I've been doing this thing lately where I've just sort of been like thinking back on all the work I made like 10 years ago, because I've also been making comics for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about like all just like how mortified I am to be the person that I was back then, and like the like I shouldn't have been allowed to like have opinions on anything or like state them with such like
right.
such fervor.
Yeah, I think that I felt that way for a while, but at some point I just got to a point where I just found it endearing. Like I feel like my younger self is almost, I mean, it's certainly like a stage
mm-hmm.
or like, yeah, like a point on the journey to whatever I'm like now. But I find it like endearing more than embarrassing.
The like compassion for your younger self, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think finding that was what made me like able to make this book in a way.
That's awesome. That sounds like aspirational.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good like yeah, it was a pretty cathartic process, I guess. That way.
Yeah, how is the catharsis of it been affected by like having it out there and having other people like read it and comment on it and stuff?
I mean, it's interesting seeing like, I think, yeah, just with any books, seeing like, oh, like, what you took from that is like not at all what I meant or,
right.
you know, what I thought would be taken from it. But also, you know, that's been, I guess, both, I wouldn't say bad and good, but just like both like unexpected and, you know, it's not, that doesn't always mean it feels bad.
Right.
So
yeah, absolutely.
It's, yeah, so it's, I think, you know, it's weird going from sort of self-publishing eventually to, having a publisher where there's going to be like, you know, a 6-month minimum delay between turning things in and the final object being out there.
Mm-hmm.
But actually I think that at least in my case for this project was that delay was a good thing to give mm-hmm. me a little more distance from it. Even though I did like put the story online as a webcomic, I didn't have so many people, like now I'll see people like tweeting or write a review, you know, where they're sort of summing up their feelings about it. That didn't happen so much with folks mm-hmm. reading the webcomic. They would be more like, oh, I like this drawing or this moment or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's definitely been an interesting process, but one where I am kind of a little bit removed with the passing of time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, the delay is probably really helpful.
Yeah, like I remember when What Is a Glacier came out, which was an earlier, like sort of 32-page like floppy comic I did with Retrofit. I think mm-hmm. it was about that long. And that was like, you know, I turned it in and we had it out, I think like 2 months later or something. And I was like not ready to like kind of promote it. I wasn't ready to like talk about it. It was really raw. And I was just kind of like, I don't even like this, you know, what did I even barf out? And now I look at that in retrospect, I'm like, oh, I actually like that book. And I didn't really give it I just didn't have it in me at the time to like to talk about it in a way that was helpful for it finding readers, you know? So
that's interesting too, and especially something, well, I mean, this is probably universal, because like you were saying, fiction oftentimes draws from people's real world experiences, but like when you spend so much time with something and working on something, and then you have to go right out and tell people like why they should read it or why why they want to read it.
Yeah.
That seems insane.
I know. It's crazy to me. It's very bizarre.
I think that's just part of the like terrible tragedy of being a cartoonist or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
Or an artist, I mean, of any kind.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about like the word marketing, it comes from like taking your object to market, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I have to go out to the market and make sure everyone knows that this is a worthwhile endeavor. And it's like, I mean, I think because of self-publishing kind of gets you ready for that in a way that I think a lot of authors maybe don't get that if they're just sort of working on their, for better or worse, right? Like you kind of know what it's like to have readers, and I am a bit envious of, but I don't know if it exists, like an author that gets to just write and not
have to hustle.
Think about, yeah, the hustle. I mean, I'm sure there are a few of those.
Oh, yeah.
There are a few of those, but
mega famous writers.
Yeah.
It is all at the end of the day, like a complete, like it could be so much worse, right? Like it's all, at the end of the day, it's all silly, but it is kind of it's kind of interesting just to think about, like, you, this is like such a personal narrative and you spend so much time crafting it and you spend so much time like agonizing over it, and then it becomes like to the point where you've spent so much time with it that you start to hate it.
Yeah.
And then you
totally.
Have to turn right around and be like, but you wouldn't hate it, audience.
Right. You don't have the same baggage as me, dear reader.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll love this baggage.
You'll love to see why.
I mean, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, it was, you go.
Well, one thing that was really cool that I did with this book that I had never done before was that my friend Chris Green, who's another cartoonist, in Toronto, he helped me like as my assistant for the last like I want to say about 2/3 of the book, doing like spot blacks digitally and helping me sort of reassemble my pages, because
mm-hmm.
the way that I draw them is a little bit scattered. I sort of have areas where I'm repeating drawings and things like that. So that was great because it meant that usually it's like, I'll, you know, for the first part of the book, I would draw it and then I would scan it and I would do the spot blacks. And by the time I got to the spot blacks, even though it was such a small sort of relative to the amount of work, it was a small thing. It was like, that was the point where you're putting the finishing touches on. And even though you're mostly kind of following the sort of paint by numbers of what's there, like there's portions where I can see that I kind of was like, oh, I need to get this page on the website, so I'm just gonna sort of push this out the door. And then once he was doing it, it became this cool thing where, yeah, I would send it off to him and I'd have more or less an idea of what it was going to look like. And then I would get to see it after he had, you know, put his touch on the pages. And yeah, and that was a really, really cool thing. And I traded him. I'm building like a sort of a fancy website for him now.
Oh, cool.
So it was like this cool work trade thing. I mean, I paid him also, but
right.
It was just a really different experience. I've never had anybody like really work on my comics before, as far as I can recall.
Yeah. That's such a, interesting, because it opens up the collaboration question too.
Just yeah. Like,
what was that like? What was that? I mean, it's sort of just like the spot blacks, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, he was doing, you know, he had more creative reign than, you know, I like when I would give it to him, I wouldn't put little X's in every part. I would kind of be like, okay, this scene is night. And I had done, since I had done quite a few, like from the beginning, he had sort of a style guide.
Cool.
So he could look at the pages that I had done and kind of say, okay, how would Sophie do this?
Right.
And like, yeah, sometimes I would get pages back and be like, oh, like I didn't mean for it to be that way. And we would change them. But it was, yeah, it was really cool from the beginning to see like kind of how well he could sort of do the things that I had like, just like how I would have wanted it.
Cool.
For the most part. So, and then I'm sure there were things that he came up with that I would have either not like had the brain space to kind of do to that degree.
Yeah.
Or just wouldn't have thought of. So yeah, it was cool.
That's really cool. Cool to see like your work being replicated almost like in that. Just like, this is, I'm handing this off and it's coming back and it looks like exactly how I would want it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really, and he's like, he's amazing and fun to work with and very understanding.
Cool.
Like if I was ever like a little bit of a diva about something, he was like very, very, you know, and since he's a cartoonist,
right,
too, of course, like, yeah, he got it.
Get it. What have you, so aside from contradictions and meetings and book tour stuff, like, what have you been up to lately? This is the part where you can be like, I'm doing whatever, quarantine sucks ass or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I mean, so I pitched a piece. I did like a 12-page comic for the Nib.
Cool.
Magazine for the Power issue that came out like a month ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I don't know. What is even his time? It might have been 2 months
yeah.
ago. But that was something I pitched like right before the lockdown started. And so I spent the first couple months of lockdown working on that.
Cool.
But I haven't been making that many comics. I mean, I've just been, yeah, busy with the publicity stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I have a copywriting job. I have, I work for Alison Bechdel, doing assistant work for her book that's coming up.
Cool.
And other stuff too for her, but that's the project we're doing right now. So that's what I've been spending most of my time doing. Some sort of little like activism stuff here and there around, mm-hmm. like tenant organizing, trying to support some of that that's going on around here. But yeah, that's the gist of it.
Hell yeah. I have a question to ask, and it is that I need tips on how to play Magic the Gathering.
Well, that would take a lot longer than we have.
Fair. I just started messing around with Arena
Yeah, be careful. I guess that's my first tip.
Don't spend a bunch of money.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That has been I was playing Magic before this all started. I've definitely been playing my share of Magic during lockdown. It's something to do.
There's not a lot to do.
Yeah.
Something to do.
Yep. I'm in a Discord channel with like a few comics Magic friends. And,
oh, cool. Hell yeah.
It's a good time.
I feel like we've kind of talked about everything that I had lined up. What do you want to, is there anything else aside from, where can people get the book and stuff? And
yeah, well, Drawn and Quarterly has, some signed book plates from me. So if you buy a book from your local bookstore, you can send them proof. I think it's publicity@drawnandquarterly.com. If you send them an email, they will send you a signed book plate, and they're these cool little two color offset book plates that were printed by my local Green Union printer.
Hell yeah.
Autumn Press.
That's so cool.
So yeah, it was cool to be able to do something through like a cool business around here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can get it anywhere, but the best place is your local bookstore.
Yeah. Cool.
I don't know. Comics.
They're great. Cool. Well, thank you so much for talking to me, Sophie.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for doing this podcast. I definitely listened to the archives that were available to me when I was a McDowell fellow. I did this residency, and you have these little like work cabins where there's no internet. So I would download a bunch of podcasts at the beginning of the day at the library, all the cartoonist podcasts that I could find, and then take them so that I could listen to them like while I was out in my cabin.
Aww.
So this was one of them.
Wow. Thank you. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, then I will talk to you later. I'm going to stop the recording.
Okay. Sounds good.
So we could just say bye.
All right.
Bye. Alright, that was our interview with Sophie Yano. Thanks, Sophie, for being my guest. Thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you to The Past is Another Planet for doing that outro and intro music for the show. Thank you to Lauren Gallagher for doing the show art. You should absolutely go and check out typepencils.com. We'll have links to Sophie's work and to Buy the Contradictions. And other than that, I will talk to you next month. Bye!